This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Welcome to Hey YA! From great new books to favorite classic reads, news stories to the latest in on-screen adaptations, Hey YA is here to elevate the exciting world of young adult lit. Hey YA is a book riot podcast hosted by Erica Azafetti and me, Tirza Price. We are recording this on February 9th. And hello, Erica. How are you?
Hey. I'm doing pretty well.
Yeah.
It's an interesting time. January flew by. Alaska forever somehow. Now we're in February. How are you doing though?
It truly did feel like January was a year.
Yes,
and
it does.
Now I'm like, wait, it's February. Like we're halfway through February already. What's happening?
How? It doesn't feel like Valentine's. Like we're doing Valentine's content and stuff like that, but it just doesn't feel like it's supposed to be Valentine time for Valentine's.
Yet. I know. Yeah, but you know what? I'm all for the Valentine's Day candy.
Yes, absolutely.
Which I have been enjoying in great amounts.
Yes, it is a fun time always. Books yes. are fun, the treats are fun, everything's fun.
Did you, as a kid, do the whole like little tiny paper Valentines that you would like then hand out to all your classmates?
Yes.
I was like knocked over with a wave of nostalgia for that time, just because like, you know, I think we commercialize Valentine's Day to a point where it's everything's about like, oh, passionate love and romance. But I kind of love that as a kid, you'd just be like, nope, I'm just going to give like these little notes of appreciation to every kid in my class. Mm. And then we all got candy and it was a sugar fest.
That's so true. That's such a good point. And I like too how like, I don't even know if kids still do this, but like do like, you know, the exchange that you're talking about. With the same style of Valentine's we had. But I also loved picking out my Valentine's, like what style, because it'd be like a cartoon you liked or Barbies or trucks or toys you liked, some movie, Toy Story, whatever.
Yes.
And now that you mention that, that was a very like cute, nostalgic time. And even like the night before, writing all my classmates' names on the thing and stuff like that. That's such a good point, because everyone would get, like you said, appreciate it. And it always felt nice to get all those Valentines from everyone and the candy, obviously.
Yeah. And it just was kind of fun. And I think like maybe it might have sparked my love for snail mail, because I love writing letters and notes to people. So yeah, I'm just getting nostalgic over here as we were talking about Valentine's Day.
I do actually like receiving mail too. That's interesting now that you mention it. Yeah. Oh, good times.
Well, yeah, we're going to talk about Valentine's Day, so we're going to get mushy if you are like, no, I'm anti-Valentine's Day. Well, I'm sorry. Maybe skip this episode. But before we do that, we've got a news article, and we're going to hear from our first sponsor.
Today's episode is brought to you by The Dial Press, publishers of The Prospects by KT Hoffman. The pressure cooker of minor league baseball leads to major chemistry in this exhilarating, sexy, and triumphant Rivals to Lovers debut romance. Gene Ionescu is the first openly trans player in professional baseball. He has nearly everything he's ever let himself dream of. That is, until Luis Estrada, Gene's former teammate and current rival, gets traded to the Beavers. Now, Gene and Louise can't manage a civil conversation off the field or a competent play on it, but in the close confines of dugout benches and roadie buses, they begrudgingly rediscover a comfortable rhythm. As the two grow closer, the tension between them turns electric and their chemistry spills past the confines of the stadium. So this is one of the first adult rom-coms published by a major publishing house centering a gay trans man by a gay trans man. It also has ADHD and anxiety representation and some joyful, heartfelt moments. Make sure to check it out. And thanks again to The Dial Press, publishers of The Prospects by KT Hoffman, for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by National Geographic Books. So take a second, think to yourself, what is one of the like weirdest, but kind of interesting, intriguing, intelligent animals that you know of? If you, like me, think of an octopus, then Secrets of the Octopus by Cy Montgomery is the book for you. It is a beautifully illustrated book that explores the underwater world of the octopus, a creature that resembles an alien life form, but whose behavior has earned it a reputation as one of the most intelligent animals on the planet. This journey into the world of the octopus reveals how large their brains are. They occupy their whole body, not just their heads. They can adjust their genetic makeup to respond to the demands of the environment. So with this book, you can see how the octopus can change shape and color to camouflage themselves more effectively than any other species. They are cool AF. So learn about all of this and more in Secrets of the Octopus. And thanks again to National Geographic Books for sponsoring this episode.
Before we get to the rest of the show and to the books, we wanted to announce that Book Riot is hiring a full stack web developer. Applications are due February 28th. So if you're interested in coming to work for us, we'd love to have you. Just make sure you get your apps in by February 28th.
All right. So you clued me into this news article, which made me laugh because there are two new Twilight books in the works.
Yes.
Which my first reaction was, really?
Yeah.
That sounds so terrible to say. I mean,
it's your truth, Tirza. It's right? Your truth, and that's okay.
I read all the Twilight books like every other, you know, not middle school. That was in high school, and those books came out. Like every other high school girl, but it's interesting to me when, like, something like Twilight has been around for so long that, like, there is demand for, like, more books. Because I was really surprised when Midnight Sun came out, which, if you are unaware, is the version of Twilight but written from Edward's perspective. Like, that was published a couple of years ago. Ooh. And that was, like, really popular. I was like, seriously? So it makes me wonder, like, is it finding new readers? Is it, like, the nostalgia? I don't know.
Yeah. But
Stephanie Meyer's working on two more Twilight books, and she did not share her details. They're just outlined. She's gotten a little bit written, but they're not fully written. And apparently she has confirmed that they will not be sequels to Midnight Sun. So who knows which direction she's going in?
Yeah, that's interesting. I remember before Twilight got super duper popular, I remember seeing it in like my library or whatever when I was in high school. And it looked like something I would normally like, but at that moment, I just didn't feel like, I felt like reading something different. So I never ended up reading them.
Oh.
So I have no, I didn't see the movie.
Interesting.
I know what happens just because it's such a cultural, it was such a cultural moment, Twilight. Like, that's the only reason I know what happened. And it wasn't like, I feel like if it had come out a little, if I had become aware of it just a little sooner, I probably would have really liked it because I liked, you know, supernatural stuff and all that stuff. But I just never got into it. It wasn't like, I wasn't against it. I wasn't like anti-Twilight. I just was like, oh, well, you know, I'm not feeling those type of books right now.
Yeah.
So I'm just like, but yet, and yet I know all of the funny, like, weird things and the main plot and most of the things that happen.
It's a wild ride. And I know the last full episode we did, I was like, oh, I'm going to make you watch The Breakfast Club. And, like, I'm not going to actually make you watch all the Twilight movies. But, like, I'm like, I would also not be opposed to just, like, watching you watch all the Twilight movies. Because, I read all the books and I only saw the first three movies. Or first four, I forget. So the Breaking Dawn, they broke into two movies. I remember seeing that movie in theaters. And at that point, I was a little bit more like, maybe Twilight's a little bit ridiculous.
Maybe.
But, like, the birth scene, because, like, you know, Bella, like, spoiler alert, Bella gives birth to Edward's baby.
Right.
But don't worry, they're married when they have sex and conceive this girl. And so she gives birth, and the giving birth scene is so absurd. Like, I was watching it in theaters with a friend of mine who was, like, really super, like, serious Twilight fan. And I just started laughing, and I could not make myself stop.
Are you serious?
And she was so upset with me because I'm just, like, laughing in the middle of this movie. And I was like, it's ridiculous.
That's awesome.
And anyway, I don't think I watched the second half of Breaking Dawn after that.
I guess you didn't. I remember that, spoiler alert, and this is from, as someone who, again, has not seen any of the movies in their entirety, I've seen clips and I've read none of the books. I remember, what's his name, Jacob, the werewolf one?
Mm-hmm.
He, like, imprinted on their daughter or something,
mm-hmm.
which was, like, a weird thing. And I was like, mm-hmm. ooh, that sounds kind of funky. I don't know what that means in the larger context, because, again, I have not read it. But I'm just like, that sounds weird.
Yeah, so, like, in the Twilight world, werewolves, like, they have, like, their one true loves that they, like, imprint upon.
Yeah.
And they can imprint upon them at any time, like, even if they're not in love yet. But, like, you know, you imprint upon them and it's, like, all of a sudden you, like, have to protect them at all costs and you, like, absolutely love them. And then, like, with the idea that then that relationship, if it hasn't already, will develop into, like, a romantic relationship. And, Jacob's, like, in love with Bella throughout the entire series, and she chooses Edward, and then he imprints upon her infant daughter.
I was, like, hoping when you were just explaining it that maybe the imprint process, whatever, would, like, you said it's love, and I was like, oh, maybe it's also, like a familial love? And you're like, nah, romantic.
No,
like,
no, it's like, basically, and, like, okay, keep in mind, if anybody's, like, read the books more recently than I have, it's been, like, 10 years since I've read, way more than 10 years now that I think about it. But, no, like, if I recall correctly, also, because the baby is, like, this weird half-human, half-vampire thing that nobody's ever seen before. And, like, vampires aren't supposed to age, so it's, like, really weird that she, like, you know, is even able to, like, exist and be born. And so as she, like, after she's born, like, she has, like, this, like, super fast, like, growth. So they're like, oh, by the time she's 4 years old, like, she'll be old enough for Jacob to, like, romance. And I'm like, that's not reassuring. Not at all.
Okay. All right.
Yes, it's an interesting mix. Like, okay. We could probably do a whole offshoot series about the Twilight books.
Oh my god.
I mean, and I'm so sorry if anybody's like, how dare you, like, make fun of Twilight? Like, I'm really excited. Like, I'm happy if you're excited about these books. I'll be curious to see which direction she goes. It'd be interesting to see if she does, like, a spin-off or if she kind of flushes out that vampire world. I think whatever she writes will probably be, you know, really successful.
Yeah, definitely. And I think too, like, I don't know if people on TikTok, I don't know if you've noticed, like, people talking about it on TikTok and stuff, but just, like, your question earlier of, like, is it older fans, like the original, like, OG fans, or the new fans? But it's probably, like, I guess both, because it has really maintained popularity through, like, a decade or more at this point, which is impressive. Very impressive. Yeah.
I think it's it came out, like, what, 2006? So, like, 17 years?
Yeah.
Which is insane.
That's wild. Yeah. Kudos to Stephanie. Miss Meyer, honey, collect your flowers. Question, Tirza.
Yes.
Would you be curious to see, like, how you reacted? Like, would you reread the first few books to see, like, how you reacted to them at your age now? Or would you just be like, oh, that's a part of my past and that's that?
I mean, I'd be open to it if we wanted to do that on the show. Mm-hmm. I think it'd be interesting because let me tell you, I really, really, really loved those books when they first released and I read them at like age 14 or 15.
Right.
I would have been 14 when the first book came out. Right. I really love them. And I think that there are some things that she does really well in those books. Like the idea of, like, oh my gosh, we're getting so off topic. But this is kind of like related to her Valentine's Day sort of topic, which is like what she does really well, I think, is capture that feeling of like having a crush or feeling like you really, really like somebody when you're a teenager. Because like when you're a teenager, you don't necessarily have like the emotional maturity or awareness to like act upon your feelings or communicate them with like somebody else. And it can feel like, you know, the person that you have this major crush on is just like this total enigma.
Yeah.
And, you know, you just like all you can do is like stare intensely at each other. And then like just the idea of like brushing hands or holding hands is like so immense and so important. And it takes up a lot of like space in your emotional early romantic life. So I think she really like took that and dialed it up to like 100. And then she just was like, vampires and some, you know, fantasy wish fulfillment. And I think it was a perfect mix for, you know, teenagers in particular. But, like, obviously not just teenagers, because a lot of adults, this resonated with them, to just, like, really fall in love with the series. I think the series kind of goes a little off the rails in the third and fourth books.
Right.
But, no, I think that there's, I mean, I would never say, like, it's total trash, don't even bother. Like, I think that there are some things that, like, even, like, as writers of YA, like, you can look at and learn from, because... like it or not, it was a very successful series.
That's a good point, looking at like people who are interested in writing and stuff like that, writing YA, reading YA and other novels, other books, from a perspective of like, okay, what does this writer do well? That's just like an interesting point. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that like sometimes if we like judge books as like, you know, not good or bad and, you know, in like a broad sense, but like they're really popular, it's even more important to just kind of like just be critical for a moment. And like not critical in a mean way, but like critical in like a let's put on our thinking caps and think like, what is it that is making this book so popular or selling so many copies or whatever.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's a good point. That makes sense. And I like that the new story kind of, it does go with our Valentine's theme. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I feel like it helps to set that mood. Of course, today we're talking about romance, diverse romance. And I feel like I see our list, and our list is a poppin'. It looks really good. I'm excited to talk about these. Who should go first? Should I go first or should you go?
You go first, because I feel like I've been talking a lot.
All right, fair. Okay. So my first book is Highly Suspicious and Unfairly Cute by Talia Hibbert. Let's just go ahead and give her the Title of the Year award.
Yes, because I was going to say, she wins all the awards.
Yes, Talia always gets all the awards from me. I love her. And I mentioned this book during our most anticipated episode, and that is because I absolutely love Talia Hibbert's adult book series about the Brown sisters. Yes. One thing I love about, have you read those books?
So I've only read Get a Life, Chloe Brown, but I need to read the other ones because I really enjoyed it. And I keep forgetting to because I don't have copies. So I should just like put them on hold on Libby or something and do it because I really enjoyed Chloe Brown.
And I feel like I feel like people like the third one even better, which is, yes, Eve, it's like, it has neurodivergent characters. Oh, I love all of them. I super duper love the third one. She has like purple braids and stuff like that. It's fun. So yes, y'all want some adult romance, Talia, but keeping it YA. One thing I love about the characters in her romances is that they have things that they're going through, and there's always like some kind of growth. Everyone is going through something, whether that be insecurities about body stuff or dealing with mental health issues. They're real about it, and the presentation of these things also feels very like real and lived in, if that makes sense. And that's just real, because like we all have issues. Everyone has some kind of insecurity or thing they're working on, even while they're trying to work on the, you know, romantic relationship, you know. So it just makes it feel more real. And I'll be honest, I feel like sometimes in the effort to be more inclusive, like as far as novels go, things sometimes get kind of tacked on, let's say, and that can be with the best intentions, but it doesn't stop them from feeling tacked on. And with Talia Hibbert, just has a great way of making everything not feel like that. It could very well be because she is neurodivergent as well as disabled, but she just writes really well from that place. So anyway, that's my spiel on Hibbert. As you can tell, I will read any and hopefully everything by her. This particular book is about Celine and Bradley, high school students who used to be friends until Celine's interest in conspiracy theories turned Bradley off. So now they're like kind of academic rivals because Bradley is like this jock and he like hangs with the cool kids. And Celine's interest in, like I said, conspiracy theories and posting things to social media about those conspiracy theories is like too much. She does too much. She does the most, as they say. So, well, one day Celine signs up for a survival course. It's in the woods. That offers a scholarship to the winners. And Bradley is like, okay, well, I can use some scholarship money because who couldn't? I'm not even in school. I can use some scholarship money also. So he signs up as well. And so like now the two of them have to work as a team. And as they rough it in the woods, they go over their past and hash some things out. And let me tell you, this is so cute and funny at times, which is also a trademark of Hibbert. It also has some great family support. And Bradley is a sweet little muffin baby. We must protect him at all costs. Oh, and the banter is chef's kiss. If you like, you know, quick, witty banter, which I very much do. So again, that is Highly Suspicious and Unfairly Cute by Talia Hibbert.
So cute.
Yes.
I have yet to pick that one up, but definitely on my list.
Mm-hmm.
So my first pick is Hani and Ishu's Guide to Fake Dating by Adiba J. Girard. And this is such a good book. Like, it really strikes the balance between being really sweet and cute and fun, but also dealing with some like really serious and big issues, which I am always impressed by. Like, there's so many great romance novels out there right now that are not just like fluff, like they are digging into like deeper issues while also offering like these really wonderful romances. And it's always just really impressive to me. So this book, it's set in Ireland. It is about Hani and Ishu, and they are basically like the only brown girls in their very white Irish school. And everybody just kind of assumes like, oh, because, you know, you're both, you know, from the same culture, even though technically they are not. I believe Hani's from Bangladesh. Her family is from Bangladesh and her and Ishu's parents are from India. No, they're both Bengali. Sorry. I was getting confused with the first book that she wrote, which is The Henna Wars. So they kind of know each other, but it's not like their family is really socialized outside of school or anything like that. But everybody just assumes that like, oh, you guys would know each other because of, you know, who you are and who your families are. Not necessarily true. Hani is, you know, one of the popular girls at school. She's got these friends who don't really seem to understand like who she is, but she just kind of, you know, brushes it off. Ishu is like this very intense, very academically focused. She's got some demanding parents at home. And they find themselves in a fake dating scheme when Hani comes out as bisexual to her friends. And her friends are really kind of awful about it. They're like, oh, but you've never dated a girl. You've never even mentioned like liking a girl. So you're not really bisexual, which we, of course, know is horrible, like biphobia and erasure. And she is really upset by this. And so she panics and she's like, well, yeah, I've got a girlfriend. You just don't know about her. And then they're like, well, who is it? And she says, Ishu. And Ishu, of course, is unaware of this. And so Hani goes to her and is like, help. And Ishu is kind of like, why would you say this? And why would I help you? But Hani's popular. And she's thinking, well, maybe I can trade in on her popularity so I can be voted head girl at school, which would set her up really well for applying to university. So thus begins their fake dating scheme, which of course leads to real romance. Some things I really liked about this, Hani is Muslim and she's, you know, she's practicing. Her faith is really important to her. And it was really cool to see a Muslim girl who's queer, and her parents are also actually pretty accepting of her identity. And I just thought that that was really cool. Yishu is, you know, a little bit more, you know, she's more closeted. She's a little bit more self-aware and self-conscious, but she also has some family stuff going on that leads to her wanting to always appear to be perfect and on top of her class. And it leads to some communication mishaps with her family. So I just thought that this was a really great book that kind of dug a little bit deeper into the idea of like culture and religion, but also contemporary romance. And it was really sweet. So that is Honey and Ishu's Guide to Fake Dating by Adiba Jagirdar.
Awesome. I'm also sitting over here wondering, like, what if, is that like a fast track to getting a partner? Like, oh, I told these people, like, I had a boyfriend. So can you just, like,
yeah.
Do you mind? Would that be terribly inconvenient for you?
Like, fake dating is hilarious to me. Yes. Because, like, I just was like, who agrees to be fake boyfriend and girlfriend? Is this a thing? Like, if
like,
you
does it ever happen?
Does that ever happen? Like, according to books, it happens all the time.
Yeah. I'm not opposed to it in real life. Like, the idea is interesting, but I'm like, I've never seen that.
I know, right?
I'm curious. Like, if y'all have seen some fake dating, I would love to hear the story. Like, actually really appreciate it. So
tell me your real fake dating stories. Yeah, unfortunately, I went to high school in the mid-2000s. So the only fake dating that was going on was like, hey, will you agree to be my girlfriend so my parents don't know I'm gay? And people were like, yep. And that did not lead to romance. So I'm like, give me the happy fake dating, like real and like romance end game type of things.
That's real. I didn't even think about that. Yeah.
Maybe I just dated myself there, but yeah.
Yeah, no, you're good. Yeah. Happy, tell us some happy fake dating stories if they exist.
Real please. Fake dating stories.
Real, yes. Fake dating story. Or even if they didn't end up happy. But yeah. So, whew. That sounds fun. I like how people of color all know each other. Side note, we don't. Yes, that is a good one. The next one I have is Reggie and Delilah's Year of Falling by Elise Bryant. And this came out like 5 minutes ago. Well, literally like the end of January, but super hot, super fresh. And here are some more great nerdy characters, or character, I should say. You've got Reggie, who is into Dungeons and Dragons and who calls himself a blurred, which just means black nerd for the uninitiated. He also writes and publishes articles online about racism anonymously. And then there is Delilah, who is just trying to seem like this like super chill girl at school. It's a performance, though. And this performed chillness results in her being in a punk band as a lead singer, even though she has no experience singing or with music or anything like that. But that's like a perfect example of how she's trying to fake this very like cool persona. So anyway, the two meet and they instantly like each other, but their interactions keep getting interrupted. Like when they first meet Reggie, you know, they have their little meet cute moment. They're like, oh, you're cute. Like, oh, you're cute. But then one of her bandmates comes up and Reggie like backs off because he thinks that she's with that guy or whatever. And throughout the book, they meet on different holidays. Like Juneteenth, St. Patrick's Day, Valentine's Day, and even Catfish Day, which I didn't know was its own date, but I'll have to investigate because I love fried catfish.
That's hilarious.
Yes, Catfish Day, what? Anyway, so the thing with both of them is that while they are attracted to each other, both of them are putting on fronts. Like Delilah is not the cool girl she tries to present as. She actually wishes she was more confident like Reggie, who she sees as someone who just likes what he likes, regardless of what anyone thinks. He like fully nerds out and he's just like, this is me. He lives in his truth, et cetera, et cetera. Meanwhile, Reggie is also faking the funk, as they say. He's not nearly as confident as he is trying to seem. So, and he fakes this confidence so that he can get, partially so that he can get Delilah's attention, her affection, whatever, so she'll like him. So the two of them, throughout the book, two of them are working out who they really are. and also coming together romantically. So those two aspects are a large part of the story. I really like the character development here. And that is just so real. Like, you were talking earlier about how Stephanie Meyer's really, really good with capturing how your emotions are regulated, and like, especially as far as crushes go as a teenager. And this is a big aspect, I feel, of adolescence and, like, you know, your early 20s, mid 20s, even for some people, listen, like, you know, and I will say adulthood too, but more so that age is like, you have to figure out who you are. And it's like, you have to, some people have to, you know, try on different, I don't know, different facade. Facade means fake, but try on different personalities and try different things and grow into yourself and grow into your confidence in yourself and being who you are and liking what you like. So that's just a big, you know, a big part of adolescence. And I like how it's handled here. So definitely pick this one up. It is, again, Reggie and Delilah's Year of Falling by Elise Bryant. And we will get into some more books right after we hear from our sponsor.
Today's episode is brought to you by Flatiron Books, publisher of The Familiar by Leigh Bardugo. This is one I'm actually super excited about. I liked Leigh Bardugo's other adult fantasy books, and so I'm really looking forward to this one. It's set in the Spanish Golden Age during a time of high stakes political intrigue and glittering wealth. It follows Luzia, a servant in the household of an impoverished Spanish nobleman who reveals a talent for little miracles. Her social climbing mistress demands Luzia use her gifts to win over Madrid's most powerful players, but what begins as simple amusement takes a dangerous turn. Luzia will need to use every bit of her wit and will to survive, even the help of Guillén Santángel, an immortal familiar whose own secrets could prove deadly for them both. So The Familiar by Leigh Bardugo is on sale now. And like I said, it's a must read of the season. It's perfect for anyone who loves history, a little bit of magic, a lot of danger. You can get your copy now at LeighBardugoTheFamiliar.com. And thanks again to Flatiron Books, publisher of The Familiar by Leigh Bardugo, for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Amazon Publishing. So I got a story with a little Old West debauchery, if you want to get a little messy. So there is a city steeped in the Old West mess. And in the city, a reporter is following every lead to a dangerous place, one that could bring him glory and fame or end his life. New York Times bestselling author Robert Dugoni is back with a gripping new thriller of corruption, vice, and murder set in Depression-era Seattle. It's about a reporter covering a hot murder trial who soon learns nothing is what it seems. The story can make his career if he lives to write about it. You can learn more at amazon.com/A Killing on the Hill. So yes, A Killing on the Hill by Robert Dugoni is what you need to pick up if you are into some Depression era danger in Seattle. It's a city of big dreams and dark ambitions, and this reporter gets caught up in the muck. So make sure to check it out. And thanks again to Amazon Publishing for sponsoring this episode.
Okay, so
yes, my next pick. I'm really excited to talk about this one because I feel like it's one of those books that I've probably mentioned a few times, like on the show and on Book Riot. And I try to, like, you know, not be like, oh my God, this book all the time, but seriously, this book. And it's really great because it is by Lily Anderson, who recently got a Prince Honor for Scout's Honor. She is an amazing writer.
And Lily, yes.
Love Lily. We love Lily so much. And Lily's first two books, I think, came out and, like, were pretty well received, but, like, maybe not getting, like, the widespread attention that they deserve. And I feel like her second book in particular is greatly overlooked, but hopefully it gets some attention, especially now that she's won this award. It is Not Now, Not Ever. And it is a very loose and very funny retelling of the importance of being earnest. So it is about Elliot, who is Black. She's a teenager who has divorced parents, but it's kind of like a pretty, you know, nice situation in that everybody sort of gets along. But her parents are all very, very, very opinionated, and they all have very strong ideas about, like, what she's going to do with her future. And nobody's really asking her what she wants to do. So Elliot has a few options for her summer, which is, you know, she either gets to stay home in Sacramento and assist with her stepmother's production of The Importance of Being Earnest, or her father wants her to go to mock trial camp in Los Angeles, but her mom wants her to come to Colorado Springs, where she is in the Air Force, and basically do like a teenage like mock boot camp sort of situation. And Elliot's just like, no to all of this. She wants option four, which is to go to this tiny little college in Oregon, which has a summer camp for advanced academic kids. And she really wants to go to this summer camp in this university because this university has all of Octavia Butler's papers and her like manuscripts and everything. And it also has one of the only science fiction like undergrad programs in the country. And she wants to go there for college. But she also knows that like all three of her parents would be like, absolutely not. So she concocts this really elaborate ruse, a la The Importance of Being Earnest, where she comes up with this fake identity. She misleads all three of her parents. And she jets up to Oregon to do this summer camp thing. And she assumes the name Ever. And she also, like, registers under a fake last name. It's not a fake last name. It's basically a family name, but it's not her last name. And so she gets up there and everybody's calling her by this new name. She feels like she has this whole new persona. She's like, this is excellent. Like, I'm going to have the best summer ever. And then her golden child cousin Isaac shows up. And it just so happens that Isaac has the same last name as the name that she used on her fake identity. So they have to pretend to be siblings. And he is like, oh, you're in such big trouble because I can expose you with one phone call. And so now it like hilarity and shenanigans ensue. But it's also got a really great romantic relationship at the heart. So Ever / Elliot finds herself falling for this cute white boy who is like, she makes a lot of jokes about how he's so pale, he's a ghost, and he like carries this typewriter everywhere and he writes fiction on a typewriter. And he's like, surely you are a ghost from yesteryear because you cannot be a real human being in the 21st century. And they've got excellent, excellent banter. So I just really love this book. I think it's so funny. I love the nods to The Importance of Being Earnest. But if you've never read the play or seen the fantastic movie with Colin Firth and Rupert Everett, you know, you can get by without it. But I highly recommend at least watching the movie and then reading this as well, because it's really fun. So again, that is Not Now, Not Ever by Lily Anderson. It is available still in like ebook, and I think the hardcover is still available. I'm not sure if it was ever made into an audiobook, sadly. And I don't think it ever got a paperback release. But it's not like it's completely out of print and completely unfindable. I highly recommend getting it because it's just amazing.
Yes. Amazing. I love it. So the next one I have is Love is for Losers.
I love it.
Oh my gosh. Love is for Losers by Vibeke Bruggeman. And I just had to giggle because at the beginning of the episode, I know you're like, if you don't like Valentine's, and I was thinking, I have a book for you, actually.
Perfect.
I have a book for you. And not to say that, okay, so I'm talking about this book during our episode of romance. So clearly, you know, it's romantic. Not to convert people who are not romantic. You don't have to be. It's fine. But it's also just, I like how this story starts. It's kind of a slice of life story, which I haven't had, I haven't come across too much of in novels. I've read like graphic novels and manga that are slice of life, and I really love those. So it was cool to see this in this book, which tells its story through diary entries. It's about Phoebe, who is low-key misanthropic or high-key misanthropic. She is a teen living in London who does not believe in love, if you could, as you could tell from the title. probably. So her mom is away in Syria. She thinks she's a doctor or whatever. And Phoebe has to go live with her godmother, Kate. And because of this, she ends up working at her godmother's thrift shop. And I don't know why, but I love the setting of a thrift shop for a book. This book made me realize that. I think the only other settings that could be cozier for me are like maybe a library or bookstore, used bookstore / cafe, you know? So anyway, despite Phoebe's aversion to love, she starts having feelings for one of her coworkers, Emma, who she views as this like perfect person. And so we get to see her interactions with Emma and how Emma kind of just changes her view on things and changes her outlook on love and things like that, kind of cracks that tough shell that Phoebe has. There's a lot of like witty like jokes and stuff like that. So this is another funny one. It also has some in-depth exploration of things like grief and family issues. And some slow burn lesbian romance. Woo-hoo. And this is woohoo, yes. So this is a fun one. I'm glad I found it as I was looking for books for this episode, because I feel like it's kind of unique in its presentation. And like I said, slice of life story, which I really love slice of life for some reason. It just connects with me. So yeah, I think it's fun. Definitely check it out. Again, Love is for Losers by Vibeke Bruggeman.
I love the cover of this.
Yes.
One.
Isn't it cool?
So great.
It's so great.
It's so fun. And I thank you for reminding me about this book, because I think that, like, I know this book was on my radar at one point, but I think that it fell victim, sadly, to like a lot of the COVID like delayed releases.
Oh, I see.
And then I never like went back to it. So I'm like, looking at Libby now. Who has this book?
Yeah, it's pretty recent too. Well, hence the, like you said, the COVID. Yeah, it came out like February. Yeah, that's the thing. Like, there's so many books coming out. Like, once a book changes their release date, it's easy to like forget that it's coming out. It just kind of messes certain things up. So I totally feel you. That and the cover is, like you said, excellent.
Yeah, so good. Ah, oh, darn it! I'm looking at my Libby right now. They only have the German version. I'm gonna have to request the English.
Yes. Oh, they have a German version? Oh, that's
well,
cool.
Well, it's like a German translation, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Because the author's German.
Yeah, the author is very German. I definitely had to make sure I was saying her name correctly.
Good for you. You got it.
Yes, I tried.
Yes. So, okay. My next pick is also a sapphic novel, and it is She Drives Me Crazy by Kelly Quinlan. I know that last episode I waxed poetic about how much I loved Kelly Quinlan's Late to the Party. So now you're going to hear all about She Drives Me Crazy. So this book is about Scotty. She is a teenager. She plays basketball. And she is reeling from the breakup with her girlfriend. Her girlfriend pretty much dumped her because she transferred schools. And it's not like she transferred schools like very far away. Like, she transferred schools like 10 minutes down the road. But she was like, well, you know, I just want to transfer because I want to go to a school with a better basketball team. And I think we need to break up just so I can focus on that. And Scotty is devastated. So the book begins with her first basketball game against her ex-girlfriend, and her ex-girlfriend just gets in her head, and Scotty does not handle it very well. So as she's leaving the game, she's so upset, she gets in her car and she gets into a fender bender with Irene Abraham. And Irene is kind of scary. She is like this beautiful, perfect cheerleader. She is Indian, and she is like one of those people like in high school where like you're like, she's so beautiful and perfect and kind of mean, like I'm terrified of her, stay far away. But unfortunately, Scotty, you know, hits her car. And when their moms show up to like take care of the damage and discuss the details of like, okay, how are we going to handle this? The mothers decide, oh, well, since one of you is without a car, you guys can carpool to school from now on until the car gets fixed, which is not an ideal thing because Irene is pissed at Scotty. Scotty is kind of annoyed and scared of her, and they have this very, very contentious relationship. However, they decide within a day or two of this arrangement to enter into a fake dating scheme because rumor that Scotty and Irene are carpooling makes Scotty's ex-girlfriend jealous. And Scotty wants to continue to make her ex-girlfriend jealous in the hopes that she will, you know, come back to her, which as adults, I think we all know that that is a terrible, terrible way to approach and handle a breakup. But like as a teenager, I'm like, oh yeah, I can totally see this being like a plausible thing where you're like, this could work. So they start doing this fake dating thing, but of course it gets complicated when they catch real feelings. And I really liked seeing the character evolution in this, like seeing Irene as just like this kind of scary, cold, mean girl. And then like actually seeing the depths underneath, that was really fun. But also I really liked this book because it's a very, very, very good example of how, you know, people who have like loving homes, loving families, good support systems like Scotty does, can sometimes get sucked into like really toxic and bad relationships because her relationship with her ex-girlfriend is not good. And it's really, really, really hard for her to break out of that. And that is part of what is, you know, sabotaging her new relationship with Irene. So I just really appreciated that, you know, She Drives Me Crazy is a fun, you know, fake dating romance, but it also digs deeper into like, you know, what does a toxic romance look like, and how can somebody, you know, really draw boundaries and like pull out of that with their sanity intact and, you know, then go on to learn how to be in a good, healthy relationship. So it's also really funny. This book just does a really great job of like setting the scene. There's really great, it's a really great setting. There's really great supporting characters. It's just awesome. So it is She Drives Me Crazy by Kelly Quinlan.
Yes, I am so here for. So I feel like, okay, I feel like I'm getting ahead of myself as usual, but sometimes I feel like maybe this is a Western world thing, but I feel like sometimes people mistake a writer writing about something as a writer endorsing something, which is not the case. I was just going to say, I say that because I think there should be, you know, more exploration of like what you said, toxic relationships and setting boundaries and how to come out of those relationships. I think it's so helpful because a lot of people experience toxic relationships, but I think also sometimes people mistake like an author writing about something as them endorsing that. So it's like, you know, that might put a hindrance on things and, you know, people want main characters to be likable and stuff. But I just like that YA, I just feel that YA deals with some heavy topics that I think need to be explored more. So
yeah,
let me tell you the amount of toxic relationships I've heard about from my friends or right. That I've experienced myself. And like, you know, it would be nice to be like, okay, well, the first thing is like, that's helpful to realize. It's like, okay, I'm not the only one that has experienced this.
And I think identifying it too is hard. So
yes.
Because sometimes, you know, it's easier to identify it from the outside than it is from the inside. But mm-hmm. If you have practice identifying it from the outside, then if you find yourself in this situation, you can be like, wait a second, like alarm bells are ringing.
Yes.
And I just appreciated too, like even like as I was reading She Drives Me Crazy, I could understand and empathize with why Scotty wanted to get back together with her ex. And I could really feel those like intense feelings that she had. But like also objectively, you could kind of see like, oh, maybe it's best that she doesn't.
Yeah.
So it's good.
Yeah. And yeah, things are complex. And that's why I think you said it better than I did just now. Like human experience is on a spectrum, on a continuum. Things are complex, so that's why it's not always super easy to see how something is bad. But yes, that sounds really good. We love Kelly. Well, I haven't read anything by Kelly Quinlan. I was going to say we love Kelly Quinlan, but only because I hear you talking about her all the time.
We love Kelly Quinlan.
We love Kelly Quinlan. Yes. I will back you up on that. Yes, absolutely. Whew, that's a good one. All right, so my final one today is The Stars and the Blackness Between Them by Janata Petrus. And so this is about Audrey, who lives in Trinidad and who is being sent to America because she was caught with a girlfriend, actually, which her father, a pastor, sees as unacceptable. So right off the bat, we have homophobia expressed through a parent. And she moves to Minneapolis in the U.S., where she meets Mabel, whose father is Audrey's father's friend. So they're connected in that way. Two of them meet at dinner and fall hard, basically. The story is told in two distinct voices, and the writing is so lyrical and pretty at times. The characters deal with some heavy issues, like health issues that Mabel experiences that Audrey tries to help her with. There's another storyline about totally different characters, Afua and Queenie. And Afua is on, this is going to seem like kind of random for like a romance or romantic story, but Afua is on death row for a crime he didn't commit. And so through this storyline, we get explorations of prison and death, which again, seem like they don't fit, but there is a definite connection, which adds to the complexity of the story. And I feel like it's like, okay, so the title is The Stars and the Blackness Between Them. It explores astrology, like the meaning of life. There's some magical realism elements in it that like all come together. And of course, love and queerness and blackness and different kinds of blackness, because you have Black Americans and you have Caribbean, the Trinidadian element. So all of this kind of comes together, and Petrus, the author, just weaves everything together in this very, like, with very beautiful writing and some very interesting, like, reflections on life and stuff like that. The miracle of life and death and everything like that. So I think it's a really, I love magical realism. I think it's just like a really pretty book that has these two girls who are in love at the center. So definitely pick that up if you want all of that, like, you know, you have a little bitterness, a little sourness with the sweet and beautiful writing. Again, that's The Stars and the Blackness Between Them by Janata Petrus.
That sounds really good. And it's also kind of been on my radar for a long time, but I have yet to pick it up. So thank you for the reminder that this book exists and I should get it. My final pick is one that, full disclosure, I'm still working on, but really enjoying. It is My Fine Fellow by Jenica Cohen. And it is one that I know I chatted about last, in my last episode, when we talked about, the winners of the ALA Youth Media Awards. That was in my Hey YA Extra, credit episode. So this book was a finalist for the Sydney Taylor Award, which, honors YA and children's books that, depict the Jewish experience. So this book is great because it has some really great, Jewish representation and some Filipino representation, and it's set in 1830s England. And it's kind of not quite like an alternate, but like a slightly sort of tweaked. So it's a bit more feminist than 1830s England actually was. And it is, as I said, a retelling of My Fair Lady, and it stars Penelope Pickering, who is going to this culinary institute with her friend Helena Higgins. And they are both like at the top of their class in this culinary institute, which is an offshoot of the Royal Academy. And Penelope is half Filipina, half white. Most people kind of assume that she's white because she's fairly white passing, but she knows that like her parents are not really welcome in polite society. So she is living with her best friend Helena, and Helena is this very sharp-tongued, opinionated, believes she knows everything there is to know about food and society and how things ought to be type of person. So the two girls are gearing up for their final term at this culinary institute, and they have to do a final project that will kind of wow their teachers and then will hopefully secure them a placement in society as these expert culinarians. And Penelope's project is she's going to try to show that, like, non-European cuisine is good and it should have a place in society and it shouldn't be considered as, like, weird or ucky or foreign, which is a little bit of a challenge for her in 1830s England to convince people. Helena is a little bit upset because she can't find the first project, her final project, and she wants it to be perfect. She wants it to wow everybody. And so the two girls stumble upon Elijah Little in the streets of London one night while they're sampling street vendor food. And he has, like, these really amazing, like, flavors from all over the world. And he has, like, a lot of natural talent. Natural talent that Helena is kind of drawn to, even though she is very, like, dismissive of his rough around the edges persona. And Helena decides that for her final project, she's going to turn Elijah into the perfect gentleman baker, who will then go on to, you know, open up his own bakery and be greatly successful. And, like, her final project is just to, like, prove that she can do that, I guess. It's a little weird, but, you know, just go with it. And Elijah, you know, is very poor, so he's willing to kind of put up with these, you know, two chaotic girls just for a chance at a better future. And then, of course, a romance blossoms. But Elijah is also Jewish, and that is not something that he really discloses at the beginning of the book. But because he is Jewish, that does limit him and prohibit him from certain opportunities because of his faith. So I really liked this book because it is so, like, it'll make you hungry. It has so many great descriptions of food. The banter is excellent. The romance is really sweet. I liked the dynamics, and also just, like, the gender flipped My Fair Lady retelling was really fun. I also really appreciate it because it shows that, like, contrary to popular opinion or belief, there were people who weren't white and who weren't, like, Christian existing in London in the 1800s. And this just shows a little bit of, like, what their lives were about. It's a slightly, like I said, tweaked fantastical, I mean, not fantastical in the sense that there's magic, but, like, some things have been tweaked so it's not completely true to historical accuracy. But my hot take is that I don't think things need to be completely historically accurate to be good historical fiction. So that is My Fine Fellow by Jenica Cohen.
Awesome. I will say, too, that with historical tweaking, sometimes, like, the tweaking isn't as much of a tweak as we think it is, because certain parts of history have been kind of misrepresented. Mm-hmm. I just adding that because I recently found out, well, I, you know, with, like, Bridgerton, you know, people were complaining, like, oh, it's, like, about people of color. There are a lot of people of color. And, like, oh, were there that many in England at that time, especially in, I guess, aristocratic positions, whatever. And I saw an article saying, well, actually, yeah, there were way more people of color in England then gets talked about usually in period pieces that talk about that time, like the Regency era or whatever. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, I mean, that makes sense. So just throwing that out there. Mm-hmm. Just saying, you know, but that sounds like a really good one.
Yeah. And I really enjoyed her first book, Dangerous Alliance, which is Regency era, fun, romantic adventure romp. Yes. So yeah, Jenica Cohen, if you've not picked up her books, don't sleep on them. They're really fun.
Awesome.
Yeah. Well, I think once again, we've easily run out of time, yes. Which is not a hard thing for us because we love books and books are fun. So thank you so much for tuning in this week. We hope that you found something fun and romantic to pick up. And if you're not into that romance, well, sorry, we can just move on. But I hope you at least enjoyed some good chocolate or sweet. Let's see. Please feel free to leave us feedback about the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, because it lets us know how we're doing and helps others find us. You can always email us at heyya@bookriot.com, especially with your real life fake dating stories.
Yes, please.
And then don't forget to visit bookriot.com for newsletters, more podcasts, and of course, all things bookish. Thank you again to today's sponsors for helping make the show possible. And thanks to our awesome audio editor, Jen Zink. You can follow me on Instagram. I hang out at Tears of Price. How about you, Erica?
I'm on Twitter at @Erica_EZE_.
Awesome. Well, that is it for us, and we will talk to you again soon in 2 weeks. Until then, happy reading.
Happy reading.